And welcome back to Success Made to Last Legend Show. I'm Rick Tokini, and we are so appreciative of our sponsors of today's show that include Blue Dots Partners as well as Edward Jones Financial Advisors. Our very special guest today is the one and only Dr. Joel Myers. And you know him as the visionary leader for AccuWeather that he founded in 1962. But what we want to do on today's show, Dr. Myers, is honor you for your legendary body of work and for what we think is one of the singular most important topics and subjects that affects our own humanity and society here, and it's about strong families and fatherhood. So welcome to our Legends Show, Dr. Myers.
My pleasure to be here, and I'm glad you're highlighting this problem because it certainly is a serious one.
You bet. You know, I could go on all day long about your accomplishments as an entrepreneur and a meteorologist, but I would rather talk about fatherhood. And I'm going to start with wanting your comments from Frederick Douglass's quote that says, "It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." What does that mean to you today?
Well, the evidence is overwhelming and backed up by thousands of years of anecdotal evidence, but a lot of statistics now that when a father is not present in the home, the chances of the children turning out successful, however you measure that, is much less. And unfortunately, there is an increasing percentage from already a high level of children growing up without their father present. The statistics are overwhelming. We've calculated the cost in economic terms as being as much as 4% of the GDP of this nation,
Wow. Which
means it approaches $1 trillion per year. And maybe those numbers are even conservative, but I believe it's rising to the point where it is even a question of national security. You know, things are heating up a bit between the United States and China. Some statistics show as many as 39% of children between K and 12 and grade 12 are growing up in a fatherless home, 39%. And when you look at the statistics of what happens with those children, since they don't have a role model, if they're boys, they don't have a role model for a father. If they're a girl, they don't see how a woman should be treated by a man. And the roll-off of that in so many ways is so negative. I wonder what that percentage is in China. 2%? 3%? It's certainly not 39%. So we can talk more about it, but it's a serious problem from the standpoint of the cost of the nation, cost to the taxpayers, a question of national security ultimately, but most importantly, the emotional toll and the unhappiness that it leads to among the population is overwhelming.
Yeah, and I, after reading the statistics that your team sent me today, what floored me were the number of people that end up getting mental health help and therapy, the numbers that end up committing crime. And it looks like to me that it is a bad hangover that's generational, and that if we don't arrest this as an issue, then we haven't really done much to positively affect humanity going forward. And is this is this an issue of one of we have got to make some sort of moral switch and change the compass within our own communities to make this change happen?
Well, before we get to that, let's look at some of these statistics because they are just incredible. And I think it would be helpful if we just take a minute
Sure.
and acquaint everybody with how serious these are. So 44% of children in homes headed by a single mother were living in poverty, just 12% of children in a married. That's 44 to 12. Children in a single parent home, 2 times more likely to commit suicide. 85% of children that exhibit some sort of behavioral disorder come from a fatherless home. 90% of the youth in the United States who decide to run away come from a fatherless home. 63% of youth suicides while a child was living in a fatherless home when they made their final decision. The median income for a household with a single mother is much less, 20% less on average per year. You multiply that over a 40-year lifetime, 20,000 times, but you're looking at $1 million less earning power. You go through every possible statistic, and they are just shocking how much of a difference it makes if a father is not involved, actively engaged in the life of the child. And so how do we deal with this? We have to deal with it on many levels. First of all, in some cases, the fathers don't take the responsibility seriously. You know, we teach sex education in the schools more than ever, but we don't talk about what is the possible result of sex. And that is a child and what it means and what your lifelong responsibility then becomes to that child. We've lost our way in some degree, what we're teaching in the schools, how we're educating the youth coming up. And it's an opportunity when you're a parent. It's a great thing. But I'm not sure we as a society are explaining that or embracing that. And what that means to have an offspring, the opportunity and the responsibility that comes with it. And I have to say that it's greatly intensified by the system. There are many barriers to fathers who want to be actively involved in the lives of their children. And we did a lot of research here in Pennsylvania and were floored by how much bias and discrimination there is against single fathers. And some of the terminology has been used over the years, like deadbeat dads and other kinds of comments that appear regularly in articles about single fathers, would never be tolerated if they were said about a religious group, some sexual orientation group, any kind of discrimination and bias that has been that the light has been shown on over the last decades has been, we want to deal with it. We want to eliminate it. We want to be an unbiased society. But the one area, the one group that has not had any relief, is not even looked at from that perspective, are single fathers. And they face enormous odds when they want to be involved. And so one of the biggest problems is the government, is the court systems, or the attorneys. And I can give you some examples. So children and youth in Pennsylvania often deals with children when there is a separation or divorce. We looked at the composition of the employees of Pennsylvania Children and Youth. Across the state, totals, 82% of the employees are women, 18% are men. 84% of the supervisors are women, 16% are men. Now, that by itself doesn't mean there's bias, but it certainly gives the impression of bias, and it often means that the father's view is not heard. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence of that. So then they have placed some recommendation in front of the court. Guardian ad litems are appointed by the judges, but there's no accountability in Pennsylvania, no reporting, no certain level of education or training for guardians. And many of the judges don't have any guidance or any kind of training on how things should be. So they're steeped in a tradition, the mother is the caretaker. Mm-hmm. The mother should have primary custody. You know, the father can have dinner Wednesday night and every other weekend, and that's good enough. And so, but that's not under the law how both parents are seen. Under the law, they're both supposed to have equal rights. But practically, that's not the case. We did a study of 700. We looked at 14 counties in Pennsylvania, took 50 cases at random of where parents went into court for custody. They spent thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars because they felt they wanted custody of their child and were willing to fight for it, at least to get a fair shake. So, but when you look at the results, 69% of the time of these contested custody cases, 69% of the time went to the mother, 31% to the father. You would think it would be more like 50-50. The playing field isn't even. Many times an accusation of abuse is made, and you don't have to prove it. If you make an accusation of abuse, the court will automatically issue an injunction that you're not, it's usually against the father, 97% of the time. And then the father's not allowed to have any contact with the children. And in fact, he may be marched out of the house and may appear to be a bad guy in front of the children. He's entitled to a hearing within 10 business days, which is 2 weeks. But most of the time, it doesn't happen within that time period because there's a delay or you got to go find a lawyer or, you know, it's a whole shock to the system. So many times it's 4 to 6 weeks until there's any hint of due process. And then the pattern's been established. So the mother can say, well, I've been taking care of the kids. I'm taking the kids to the doctor. I'm taking them to school. Why should he have anything more than at most, even if the, you know, and none of this has to be proven as far as abuse. And so things like this are used again against the father, and that pattern then is in place for the rest of those kids' lives, and the father's ruled out. And sometimes there's so many hills to climb, a lot of fathers give up. So we need to make it easier, not harder. For fathers to play an active and engaged role in the lives of their children.
So we're up against the legal system is one of the forces against this change. And then I want to throw out a new one to you today for your consideration. During COVID, the Great Resignation is taking place. And in the month of August alone, 4.3 million people left their job. The majority of them are going to become entrepreneurs. And I just read the meaning of entrepreneurship this morning. I thought, I'm going to ask Dr. Joel Meyer how that correlates to fatherhood, because the meaning is of entrepreneurship, the constant feeling like I'm doing both too much and not enough. And so is entrepreneurship now in the mix of competing for time with children?
Well, there are a lot of things that compete with time with children, and people can make an excuse and find reasons to not spend time with their children, or they're too busy or this and that.
Yep.
You just have to find the time. It's a question of priorities. There are times when you're an entrepreneur that you're desperate to make payroll, or you wonder if the business isn't going to survive. We all have crises in our lives. The question is, can you rise above the crisis over the 95% of the time when you're not in a crisis to spend the proper time and make up for the time you missed with the children and do the best job you can. Hey, there's no handbook that tells you how to be a great father or a great mother. You do the best you can and you do what's right. And that should guide everybody in life. You know, is this right? Is this the right thing? Do I need to really take a stand here in whatever the case may be? And that may be as far as your family's concerned. And yeah, we all need to reevaluate where we are and what's important. A lot of entrepreneurs say, well, I'm working for my family. I'm working to provide fiscal stability and provide an education for my children. It gives meaning to what we're doing. And I'm wrapped up in that myself.
Sure.
But in the end, what good is that if you haven't shared with them your experiences and your stories and what you're all about and what it is to be a good human being?
Exactly. Okay, Doctor, we're going to cut to a commercial to pay homage to our sponsors, and we will be right back. And we're back with Dr. Myers, Joel Myers, and you know him from his fantastic work in AccuWeather. And Doctor, I want to ask you, at what point in your career did you see yourself as a futurist? And did that happen as a meteorologist, given that you're always predicting the future and the cold fronts that are coming into State College, Pennsylvania?
Well, we'd only forecast the cold fronts and the movement of weather system of State College, Pennsylvania. But as you know, we're global.
Yes.
And we're the largest source of weather forecasts and warnings in the world and throughout the world. And that has taken a great effort by not only me, but a tremendous team that we have here that provide the most accurate forecasts and the best warnings. And so people use us, whether it's on free on our apps or on AccuWeather.com or all the selling to all the businesses, thousands of businesses around the world and the media and so on. They choose us because we save them money and help them. And so that's been a lifelong realization of a dream. As a futurist or looking to the future, I guess I've always been interested in prediction. It started with weather. But as I look back, I mean, I made, even in college, I predicted, I wrote a column in the college newspaper. I started by doing the weather forecast and got sucked in to write columns and editorials and so on. And I remember I predicted almost every state accurately in a very close election between Nixon and President John F. Kennedy. And so different things outside of weather. I remember I predicted the collapse of the Soviet Union 3-4 years in advance. People said I was nuts, but I've been called nuts many times. So I do take pride in seeing things sometimes ahead of other people. You know, when you make a prediction, you have to be prepared for some of them to be wrong.
That's right. That's
certainly I've seen tremendous progress in weather forecasting and I'm blessed to be a part of the contributor to that. But obviously it's much more than me. But Nate Silver in his book, The Signal and the Noise, evaluated predictions and forecasts of all types, dozens of different kinds, from political predictions to medicine, to all types of predictions. And he concluded, given the foundation of what's available and so on, meteorology by far was the winner over the last 50 years in terms of applying science, the best mathematics, the best physics, and really advancing the state of prediction, the accuracy of prediction. But it's more than that. Really, the reason on top of that is the communication of forecast, so people make the best decision. And that's where AccuWeather has been the leader, not only providing forecasts with a greater statistical accuracy than anyone else, but making the value of those forecasts so much better. For example, in New York City, when we win on a comparison, but we give much more detail. For example, with Minutecast, we'll say that the rain will start at 34th Street at 5:43 and reach the southern end of Central Park 2 minutes later and so on. So that kind of detail. And then the impact, like with Hurricane Ida, when we predicted the greatest amount of rain we've ever predicted for New York City and said there would be widespread flooding and would threaten lives and property in the city. And we said that it would come in fast and furious, using that kind of terminology. So people made the right decision. So people took action to avoid being swept away. And that kind of communications on top of a rising level of forecast accuracy is what has allowed weather forecasting to make such great progress over the decades and has reduced the death toll from severe weather, even with increasing severe weather events, by 80 to 90% over the last 50 years. I mean, there was a hurricane in Galveston in 1900 that killed more than 10,000 people. That would never happen today.
Yeah, and I want to thank you on behalf of our listening audience for you and your team and the difference that you have made and continue to make. And if you will indulge us, we'd love to ask you a few questions of that we typically ask our legends guest. And some of these might sound silly to you, but it's important for, I think, our listening audience to have a perspective from someone like you. We'd love to know about your relationship with fear and how you've managed it throughout your career.
Fear. I guess I'm optimistic and I don't really worry. The greatest fear I had was around my children, I guess. My one daughter was within hours of dying because she had a serious infection. Luckily, I made the right decision to rent a charter plane. This was a long time ago. I'd fly her to Philadelphia and get her to Children's Hospital against the advice of a doctor here in State College, and they saved her life. But I was fearful. I remember being in a panic 24 hours until she was out of danger. And about some of my other kids in situations like that. Personally, I don't know if it was fear. I actually dealt with it better than I thought. When I was diagnosed with colon cancer that had spread to my liver back when I was 50, it turned out to be a misdiagnosis, but for 3 days, basically pushing the doctor, how much time do I have? It was 3 to 6 months, they thought. And, that was some fear, I guess, to some degree. I don't think I've had concern. I've had worries at certain times with my business, but it never got to the point of fear. Today, I'm not sure I would say it's fear, but it's great concern that people, society, are focused on some of the wrong mm-hmm. things. Technology is galloping along faster and faster than ever. 500 years ago, knowledge doubled every 500 years. 100 years ago, it doubled every 100 years. Now it's doubling every year or faster. In 10 years, it'll double every hour or every minute. There's a hyperbolic acceleration of everything, and it's influencing every aspect of our lives, from religion to our jobs to all kinds of relationships, like social media and so on. And people don't deal well with change. And people who do deal with linear mm-hmm. change. But we are in a period of hyperbolic change that is accelerating each day. And it is going to be extremely disruptive. And we need to be, as a society, just look at the United States, stop fighting and giving in to some of the fighting that's being financed by outside the United States to create divisions in the United States. And there are threats from AI, which is changing everything. China is completely devoted to AI. And there's some calculations that show that we will have lost any military superiority that we have within 12 to 15 months, because things are changing so mm-hmm. fast. And we'll have no course of action if different things happen around the world without putting the United States in great danger. That's a serious challenge. And how did we get to this point? In fact, the Secretary of Defense just acknowledged that on Sunday. He went to the Reagan Library. He's Biden's Secretary of Defense. And he went to the library of a Republican president in this polarized time. And he complimented Ronald Reagan and he gave a speech about that challenge. And if you really listen to what he said just this past Sunday, it was a wake-up call to America. And we need to be tuned into the important things and important threats. You know, I saw the movie Chernobyl, and you think of all these nuclear missiles pointed by Russia to the United States, and the United States to Russia, the United States to China, and vice versa. And now we're talking about hypersonic speeds, five times the speed of sound, that these weapons, they can cross the oceans in an hour, and they're determination as to whether to go or not to go is up to a computer, is up to AI. Humans are out of it. Mm. What's the threat? You know, I asked Kushner, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, I said, isn't there any concern? He's never really talked about an accidental nuclear strike. He says, Joel, we think about that at the White House every day. There's serious issues that we're ignoring while we caught up in our day-to-day activity.
Yeah. Thank you for expressing some real fear and giving us a dose of reality. AccuWeather predictors and futurists go far beyond the weather and cloud formations, in my opinion. That's what I wanted to hear from you to alert everybody else to wake up. And I've got a couple of other philosophical questions, and then we're going to end on the most important topic, okay? So I'll circle back, I promise you. I want you to look back on the early 60s, and I want you to tell everybody from AccuWeather perspective, just a real short story on being in the right place at the right time, and looking back on that and why being in the Penn State at the time that you were there, when you were there, and when the light bulb went off for AccuWeather. And tell us that, if you can wrap that one up in a minute, Doctor, that would be great to tell us that retrospective of right place, right time.
All right, first let me say, though, that I've had a battle, and there were challenges each and every year, but what allowed me to be successful, frankly, was the education and mentorship I got at Penn State. It was the only place I could afford to go, but it turned out at the best meteorological program in the world. And great professors, and Dr. Charles Hosler, my mentor, and gave me a lot of ideas to build on what I wanted to do, and that is combine my burning desire to be a weather forecaster with my entrepreneurial spirit. And it was a whole series of events, and I got thrown into teaching this course to upperclassmen and graduate students because the professor didn't show. So I learned a lot by teaching a course from my first year as a graduate student. I got my start by somebody calling this professor and saying, we need weather forecasts. We'll even pay for them because we need something we can't get for free. And they became my first client and paid me $50 a month. It was a series of things. It was the discussions with other students. And then a few years later, it was hiring an undergraduate to help me with do some of the forecasting, and my brother, who also helped me with ideas to market the service. So it takes a village. A lot of people who stimulated me and helped me be successful, and then of course the employees. That first student I hired, Elliot Abrams, as an undergraduate part-time, worked with me for 52 years.
Gosh.
Spent his whole career here. And I've had dozens of people who hired from college to retirement and still have dozens of people working here that have worked here 40, 45, 50 years, worked only here. And so I'm a tough boss, but somehow I've inspired them, or they've been in a crucible of excellence that exists nowhere else in the world, where they can contribute to actually saving lives, preventing bodily harm, and helping people. And that crucible of excellence is part of my legacy. But really, it only exists because of the contributions and the hard work and the amazing dedication of these people.
Thank you for that, Doctor. Okay, two final questions for you. One is about moving from success to significance, and take the stand on this one. How can other people create crucibles of excellence and start to move themselves from being focused strictly on the almighty dollar and doing making significant change for others in life?
Well, there's karma, what goes around comes around and all that. I mean, we hear all the slogans, but in the end, if you do what's right, if you're fair, if you're authentic, if you tell it like it is, even if it's unpleasant, if you stay focused on what's important to you, to your dream, if you encourage other people to, especially kids, to follow their dream and to not quit, you know, then success may follow. But more important, you'll feel good. You'll lead a happy, worthwhile life. You'll have satisfaction. And hey, there are, for all of us, there are bumps and challenges along the way. Nobody wrote, you know, and if there weren't, you wouldn't savor the successes as much if you didn't have to deal with challenges and, you know, the old saying, two steps forward and one step back. But if it's always that way, you're moving forward overall, and compounding is the eighth wonder of the world, as Einstein said. And one final thought, you know, if you improve any characteristic, whatever it is, in your emotional life, in your business life, anything, by 1% a day for 365 days, 1% a day improvement, that's all. At the end of the year, you'll be 38 times as great, 38 times as great as you were at the beginning of the year. But if you slip 1% a day, day after day, you'll only be 3% of what you are in the beginning. And the difference between 1% improvement and 1% decline is a ratio of 1,260 to 1. And that's the answer as to why there's Elon Musk's and there's people homeless. That difference is partially rooted in that you're either going forward or you're slipping.
That's extraordinary. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to share that with some friends today who are, I think, struggling with that math. Okay, final one, Doctor, is this. When we have made the change and fatherhood is now back at the top priority of our nation and other nations around the world, I'd like for you to predict what will humanity look like as a result of that change.
Well, has it changed? I see very little evidence. I see some talk. I don't see changes in the court system of significance. I don't see changes in the governmental agencies that influence and try and help individual single fathers have their more engaged time. I see a lot of talk. I see increasing recognition that there's a problem. I see very little action among the governmental agencies, among the legal profession to deal with this problem. I'm not nearly as optimistic as you. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. It's very hard to make any kind of an indent, and a lot of people don't even want to talk about it. This is not about anything against mothers. This is not anything against women. This is really to benefit the children, which every parent should be interested in. It's not about using children as a pawn, or I win or you win, and that's part of what needs to be changed. Why is it going to a court battle? Why is it a court battle over children? Why isn't it a win for the child? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about talk. I have a different view. I'll tell you this. When I started the Dad's Resource Center, I didn't know how it would be received, even the message. The message has been received, acknowledged that, yeah, this is a problem. You know, by the Women's Resource Center, they have our brochures and so on and so forth. So, but to meaningfully change what's going on, I just don't see it yet. And every day or week or month that goes by, the harm to society intensifies.
Okay, so if it takes information and better communication as a starting point, where do our listeners go to start to embrace the issue and then make that 1% change on a daily basis?
Well, the 1% change can apply to them, whatever's important to them, in their lives, which may have nothing to do with fatherhood, but may have to do with how they want to get better in some way and how they don't slip back. And that requires discipline. It requires saying, hey, I'm going to improve. I'm going to get better. I'm going to work on this, whatever professionals or friends you got need to work with or just yourself. But it requires consistency and discipline, which is tough for a lot of people because you have so many other challenges and routine things you have to deal with. As far as fatherhood is concerned, we need an uprising of recognition around this. Recognition of the harm that's being done. There's so few people really working on this. And there's very little in the press about it. And it's just some stories here and there. So just how the money's distributed. We went to the United Way. Their support may be controversial. We've written to them several times. The United Way gives a significant amount of money to the Women's Resource mm-hmm. Center. Nothing to the Dad's Resource Center. And said, well, can't we apply for even 10% of what they're getting? Well, we only reevaluate where we give money every 2 or 3 years, things like that. So there is tremendous. And I always thought before that the United Way was a worthwhile charity. Now I don't give anything to them because I see that that may not be the case. I'll donate my money, and I do to other causes. So I'm not as optimistic as you. I see some lip service here and there, but very little change. How do we change the, we've required more equity between men and women in jobs and so on. Why are 82% of the workers at the children and youth in Pennsylvania female? Why is there no effort to increase the number of men working in that field and so on and so forth?
Yeah, we have some forces up against us, folks, but I know that you can start by going and getting information at Dr. Joel Meyer's organization, and give that website out, doctor, so people can get to the information today and start to embrace the facts around the importance of fatherhood.
Okay, well, it's www.dadsrc.org, Dad's Resource Center, basically, .org, dadsrc.org.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Hey, we want to thank you for being on Legends today, and just a note of appreciation for the body of work that you've accomplished with your team, with your mentors, and I think that the message here is one for our listening audience to embrace and to start the uprising and get your arms around it and figure out together with the Dad's Resource Organization how to create change. It's going to start with individual families to make that change. Doctor, thank you so much for being on our show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking a lot of great, intriguing, and challenging questions.
Yes, sir. That was Dr. Joel Meyers. We appreciate him being on our Legends show today. And as we always wrap up every show, it is our hope that you can move your ordinary life to extraordinary. Have a great week.